Transform your life today. Welcome to Super Coach with Michael Neal.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, wherever you may be. Our topic for today is the source of whole distress and the numbers to call to get coaching on having what you want in any area of your life are 866-254-1579. It's toll free, 866-254-1579. Or from outside the United States, you can reach the show on 001-760-918-4300. As always, we're going to set the table a little bit before we get started. And just what I'd like you to do is I'd like you to take a few moments and try a little experiment. So if you can, I'd like you to close your eyes for a minute and just listen to whatever sounds are going on around you. So you're going to hear me too, but you're also going to just hear whatever else is going on around you. You might be surprised at what you hear. So just be a rock with ears. Just hear sounds the way that a video camera would. So you don't have to have any preference for one sound over another. You don't have to make up a story about what the sounds mean or where they're coming from or which ones are important. And just allow yourself to hear beyond my words and hear what else you can hear. And if you become aware of any chatter in your mind, which you probably will, just do your best to refocus on the sounds outside your head. And as you're doing that, I just want to ask you, how is that for you? When you sort of soften your ears like that, does the world seem a little bit different than it did just even a few moments ago? Do you feel maybe a lot of people say they feel a bit more peaceful? Some people will say they feel a bit more relaxed. Well, there's a reason for that. There's a reason that most people have that experience, that when the mind is quieter, and that's what happens when you focus on the sounds outside your head, as your mind quiets down, it settles a little bit like a snow globe. Like when you're thinking about something and thinking about something, it's like shaking up a snow globe. And if you want the snow to settle again, well, you don't shake the snow globe more. You just let it sit. You just give it a little bit of space. And sure enough, the little bits of snow will begin to settle until it's clear again. Well, that's the nature of our mind. It's the way our minds work. Now, the reason that's important is because the source of all distress is not the IRS. It is not your partner. It is not your children. It is not your parents. It is the thoughts that are going on in your head all day long. Now, that's not to say that you mustn't think or that you have to control. I think we get a little overly caught up sometimes in thinking, well, I must think only positive thoughts and I mustn't think negative thoughts. And the problem with that is that you're just thinking too much about the whole thing. And it's almost the speed of the thoughts more than the content that's interfering with your well-being and creating that sort of sense of distress. One of the things that I find most people, most of my clients are striving for in one way or another is a quiet mind. They don't call it that though. They say they want to reduce their stress. They want more inner peace. They want to worry less. They want to feel better about things. And the problem is that most of the things that we do in order to reduce our stress or worry less actually add to the shoulds in our head, the ought tos, the musts, the have tos. And our brains actually just get noisier trying to come up with more great ways to quiet down. There's a distinction that I find incredibly useful around this. And it's the distinction between the state of meditation and the act of meditating. Meditating is an activity, and at its best, a good meditation, it's going to actually guide you into a state of meditation. But a lot of people that I talk to struggle to maintain a meditation practice. They struggle to, am I meditating right? Am I doing it enough? One of the things that's always made me laugh is when I get upset at people who are disturbing my meditation, I kind of know I've missed the point a little. There's a famous story about UG Krishnamurti, who is one of the 20th century enlightened gurus from India, whose father was a noted Brahmin, considered a very religious man, and used to beat the children with his belt if they disturbed his meditation. That would be an example of confusing the process of meditation with the point of meditation, the state of meditation, which is that inner stillness that I tend to talk about as a quiet mind. Now, if the source of all distress is getting caught up in thought, Well, then the cure, the antidote to all distress is quietening the mind, is actually a quiet mind. So chances are, if you think back in your life and you think back to some of the most profound experiences you've had of stillness, of peace, of inner quiet, I'm going to guess that for most of you, they didn't happen on a meditation pillow. They happened when you were walking in nature. You were walking by the beach. You were in the woods. Maybe you were sipping a cappuccino. You're looking out just over an amazing view. You were communing with your cat. See, these are all the things that, like in real life, induce a quiet mind. And the secret behind all of the activities, the reason that petting a cat can work as well as a meditation practice, is because the nature of your mind is quiet. The nature of your being is well. You were not born distressed. You were born in distress, right? You come out, you're crying, but that's not because of your nature. That's because suddenly this little body has to cope with all sorts of things that it wasn't coping with before. Now, there's one of two things happening. We're going to go back to the phones. We've already got a bunch of people waiting. You can still get in. Number to call 866-254-1579. It's toll free. 866-254-1579. I'm going to go to the phones in just a minute. But if you're listening to this and you're kind of going, well, okay, yeah, no, that's very important. Right. I must figure this out. Right. Because the source of distress, it's not outside me. It's inside me. Right. I need to stop thinking so much. Did he say I shouldn't think positive? No. I shouldn't think negative. No, I should think, but not. If that's going on for you, then knowing that the nature of your mind is quiet isn't necessarily the nicest thing I could say. You probably kind of go, oh, I see. All I got to do is realize the nature of my mind. What, you know, why didn't you just say so? I could have saved years of practice. I could have saved thousands of dollars on books. That's great. Stick with me, okay? If the nature of your mind is quiet, this is the really cool bit coming up. If the nature of your mind is quiet, there's nothing you need to do in order to quiet it. Just let it be like the snow globe, and it'll return to quiet all by itself. So that's very different from trying to stop thinking or watching your thoughts. It's just allowing enough space in your head and in your life for the thought dust to settle, and then just resting in the peace that naturally arises into that space, knowing that if you experience distress, it will simply be thoughts arising like snow on the snow globe. And if you just wait, they'll settle back down like snow in the snow globe. So can meditation and exercise and walks in nature and long showers and communing with cats help? Absolutely, some of the time. But if you notice that you're spending more time and energy and effort trying to do self-care than time feeling cared for in yourself, why not just take a little time out, maybe right now, maybe while you're listening to the rest of the show today, and just enjoy the experience of being alive? I mean, worst case, you're going to feel a bit better. You'll probably enjoy yourself a little bit more. Best case, you'll drop straight into the natural quiet of your mind, and you'll get to drink deeply from the well of your being. So, a little deep for this morning. Let's go to the phones. Let's go to Jamel in Brooklyn. Jamel, welcome to the show. What can I do for you today?
Hi, Michael. First off, I want to say thank you for taking my call, and just listening to you. You know what, to me, you definitely are the real deal, and you just sort of pit this power of attention, deliberate, and all in sort of average Joe language, not too high, not too by the book. I like it, because I read all the stuff that it seemed too strict, and the way you just put it just there was great, wonderful.
No, thank you.
No, you're welcome, because it's sort of like an average Joe interpretation, which works for me, not to like meditate for 3 hours, whatever. I believe everything you just said perfectly. For me, I sort of suffer from agoraphobia, not sort of, but I do. I was diagnosed with that a couple of years ago, and I'm shy and all this stuff, and I've been working on that. But recently, when I had got momentum and started feeling good about myself, my mother just got sick. I just took her to the hospital. She has diabetes, and they think it might be a heart or either stroke. They're still doing tests on her. So I just came home to just, you know, freshen up and just sort of get calm again. But I was thinking, I was upset last night because I was like, wow, it's just as soon as I'm about to dedicate time for myself, life comes up, and now I feel like I'm almost sucked into being a nursemaid. That's what I did for years, and not really focused on myself. And I'm getting really anxious, and I was just trying to figure out what I could do now just sort of to stay calm and still stay in that road to get out of this this fear and anxiety that I've been in for years. And, you know.
Yeah, no, I hear it. And I, one of the things I just want to say, first off, sorry about your mom.
Thank you.
And let's just talk a little bit and let's see what lands. Okay. Cause the thing is, what's going to change for you, Jamel, and something will change. We have a natural, you know, when you cut your finger, you don't have to call a radio show in order to have your finger heal.
Okay.
Right. You know, it's natural. That's what your body does. I mean, you can do things that will make it heal quicker and better up to
a
point.
Oh, yeah.
But it's what your body wants to do. People don't realize that we have a psychological immune system as well.
Yeah.
And that even if all you do is just wait, the direction that our psychology wants to go in is towards wellness. So knowing that our job isn't to start the healing process, because the healing process starts the second that something is wounded. It's really just to maybe give you some understanding around it, and that understanding can often bring you peace even as other things are sorting themselves out. It is to recognize as best you can that the source of the distress is going to be some thought. It's going to be probably a series of thoughts, a whole train of thought about what will happen if. That's generally speaking.
Yeah.
You know, I said in the introduction to the book Supercoach, I said, the worst thing that can happen to you is a thought. Generally speaking, a thought about whatever the worst thing you think can happen to you.
Yeah.
And now that doesn't mean you have to change that thought. It doesn't mean you have to dig deep and find that thought. It's just knowing the reason that this is not just, you know, maybe a sad thing to happen, but something that has the potential to become very difficult for you or even lead to some real distress and suffering isn't what happened. What happened is what happened. Life is a contact sport. Stuff happens. Mm-hmm. But we kind of, in our minds, then spin it. We create thought stories around it that can make it much worse, or sometimes can try to make it a little bit better. But in either case, distract us from what is. It's almost like some people spend a lot of time trying to learn to control the weather instead of just carrying an umbrella with them.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
So I don't know how to control the universe in such a way that the people you love won't get sick and that things that you don't want to happen won't happen. I don't know how to do that. If you want to find out how to do that and somebody thinks they know how to do that, go listen to them. And if it works, call me back and let me know. But what I do know is that you can absolutely spend your time, no matter what's going on around you, in a place of peace and well-being, because your peace and well-being are natural to you. They're innate. They're not to do with conditions. They're not to do with circumstances. And the way I think about it, and it's just the way I think about it, but people seem to find it useful, is that we all have minds, okay? And those minds are, in a way, part of the big mind, part of the universal mind. We are in some ways connected to all things. And the book Supercoach, I talk about it as energy, that there's an energy behind life and we are all a part of that energy. That's scientific, that's metaphysical, that's physical. That you won't find many systems of thought that don't agree with that. And if you just check your own experience, most people kind of somehow intuitively know that we're part of something bigger than ourselves. Knowing that, whatever happens in the little self becomes a little bit easier to bear. Not because it's not real. They talk about, well, it's just not real. Well, it sure feels real, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does. Oh, yeah.
But it's not ultimately where our well-being is going to come. See, most of us have learned to play the game of try and control the circumstances in such a way that they all line up and then you can feel good.
Oh, yeah. Okay, yeah.
That's a losing game, because you will never control the circumstances to that degree. What you can do is you can grow an understanding of how your experience is being created through two things. Your thoughts. Thoughts are like the paintbrush, and your consciousness. Your consciousness is like the ability to be aware of your experience and aware of what it is that you're painting out in the world. If you were completely unconscious, you wouldn't notice anything that happens. I don't know if you've seen any of the videos on YouTube. I've been watching these lately. There's a couple of famous ones. There's one where you watch these basketball players in New York, and they're just playing on a street court, and there's a white team and like guys dressed in white, guys dressed in, I think it's white and black, but you're supposed to count the number of passes that the team dressed in white make. And you get to the end of the video and they point out that there was a gorilla moonwalking on the basketball court. And 8 out of 10 people don't see the gorilla, and they don't even believe there's a gorilla till they watch it back. Right? If you're unconscious, you don't notice anything. But most of us have a little bit more consciousness than that. And so we're aware of our experience. As your consciousness grows, you can start to become aware not just of your experience, but of what's creating the experience. In other words, your thoughts. And then you can even become conscious of what's behind that energy behind life in which your experiences are arising.
That's true. You know, I agree. I agree with what you said about if everything lines up, then you'll feel this way. And for me, I was feeling, momentum of the work I was doing, then this happened. I said, okay, well, that's done. And, you know, so you're right. That's true, because I was totally just throwing, I guess, the baby out with the bath was, okay, now that's done, and I'm back into square one. So, yeah, that's
That's great, Jamal. You're nowhere near square one. And the beauty of it is, no matter how long it took you to build up the fears, you're only ever one thought away.
Mm-hmm.
Only ever one. And that, for me, when I was going through the worst of my own depression and mind stuff, that was just the one thing that really made it easier to bear, was knowing no matter how bad it felt in the moment, you're only ever one thought away. You don't have to. It might have taken you 200 steps in, takes you one step out. Because it's not real. It's just a world of thought. It's the snow globe. And if you tried to get into, like, right, we're going to shake up the snow globe of your life. Okay, so we've got this happy Jamel sitting inside the snow globe. And we're going to shake it up so it's like there's snow all around him. If we try to deal with each of the individual snowflakes, ooh, that's a good snowflake, bad snowflake, good snowflake, bad snowflake. Or we try and get all the snowflakes to line up a certain way so they make a polar bear. Or whatever, I don't know, I'm just going here. You know, that's going to take a lot of time and energy. And it's going to actually all just get in the way of letting the snow fall. Because when it falls, it'll settle. And when it settles, there's Jamel. Happy and content and at peace, because that's his nature.
That's true. You know, I do forget about myself sometimes. When life happens, I that's another thing I forget about me. So that's true. I need to get this book because, you know, this is new to me, like just sort of thinking about things. And then I've been sort of getting tied with certain methods. But I like the idea. And like what you just say, you know, if that's one thing, then go there. But then this is how I believe. And the way you said it was so simple, and it's still like it's another thing that to be overwhelmed about how to do it perfectly.
I'll tell you what I'd like to do, Jamel. If you stay on the line after we're done talking and you give your address to the guys, I'll send you out a copy of the book from me.
Oh, wow. Thank you.
All right.
And this helps, because I'm about to go back to the hospital, but it's just those thoughts. And I'm going to record this, too, on my computer to save it. But just, you know, not forgetting myself, and also, you know, like you said, everything is not going to line up perfectly. That it works. It works. Just a sort of simple, not to think this way. Be perfect with your mind, and you know, and so this works.
Very cool, my friend. Thank you very much for taking the time to phone in.
Thank you.
All right. So let's. It's just true, isn't it? sometimes I really do. I get caught up from time to time in thinking, I need to make this more complicated. How am I going to sustain? And then, you know, I get past that pretty quickly. But a lot of this is pretty straightforward. Once you start to see how your experience is being created by your own thinking, the rest of it just sort of follows. Let's go to Dallas. Let's talk to Stephanie. Stephanie, welcome to the show. What can I do for you today?
Did you say Stephanie?
I did.
Oh, okay, great. It blanked out for a second. Well, what's going on with me today? First, how are you?
I'm very well, thank you. I'm sipping tea. Never happier than when I'm sipping tea.
Good. Well, what I'm kind of going through right now is small business changes. I'm a small business owner, and I've had to take on a contract job that primarily has me in their office from 8 to 5, so it's not like I'm doing my own thing anymore. Recently divorced, but we've been separated for over a year, and I've been with this guy for over a year, and we, you know, constantly are going back and forth about things. And what I'm finding myself, problems with myself is where I'm wanting control. I am very much analytical and want to make plans, and it's hard for me to do that with the way that life has been so upside down for me lately. And I, what you said at the beginning of the show really hit home with quieting your mind, because I will be the first person to tell you that I'll be thinking of 12 things at one time. And then more so trying to, it's not that I'm thinking all the good stuff. I'm thinking, oh, well, now, you know, now we're going to end up breaking up, or now I'm going to end up working for this person for the rest of my life. And, oh, is my small business ever going to do this? And I tend to gravitate towards the negative more so than the positive. And I never would consider myself a negative person prior to the divorce and all this upside down stuff that's been happening lately. And I'm finding out, well, then maybe I'm not as positive as I thought I was.
So can we make a couple of distinctions in there and see where they take us?
Sure.
Okay. So the first one is, let's make a distinction between what's going on in your life and what's going on in your head. Because they seem related sometimes, but they're related in the way that, now I'm sure you never did this, but you probably had some friends. I'm going to assume you're over the age of 20.
Yes.
So you probably had some friends around the age of, 17, 18, 19, 20, who may have at certain times smoked dope. Okay. I'm just going out on a limb. If you haven't, you've seen them on TV.
Yeah.
And there's a moment that anyone who ever smoked dope has had where they're watching MTV with the sound turned down, or some like music video channel, and they've got music playing in the background, and they go, oh my God, the video's matching up to the music. Right? Do you at least know what I'm talking about? I don't need you to claim that you've had the experience, but do you know the kind of thing I'm talking about?
Yes.
It really does seem like, oh my God, there's some cosmic coincidence, and what's going on outside is just like what's coming on over there. But they're not actually connected. Our brain is designed to make connections, so it makes a connection between them. It's the same thing with our thoughts and our circumstances. We've got circumstances doing what they do, and then we have thoughts doing what they do. And occasionally, they seem like they're connected. But actually, you can be at complete peace in the midst of external chaos, or you can be in complete chaos in your head when everything outside is fine. Do you kind of know that?
Oh, yeah, I understand.
So let's make that distinction between what's going on in your head and what's going on outside, and then let's take each one separately. So let's start with the chaos in your head. Okay, one of the problems with getting into, am I negative, am I positive, should I be more positive, should I be less negative, is that it just speeds up your thinking. It's like shaking up the snow globe and hoping that this time when you shake it, there'll be more bits of snow that fall on the right than fall on the left. Whatever, even if you're successful at doing that, you still have to wait for the snow to stop falling before you start feeling the peace.
Right.
So the quieter you allow your mind to get, and I say allow because one of the reasons that we don't sort of allow our minds to be quiet is we think, I better keep thinking. I'm barely keeping up as it is. I've got 12 things going, but I probably should have 14.
Yeah.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
It's actually, when you understand how your mind works, it's the exact opposite of that. It's almost like, I tell you what, can you stay with me over the break?
Sure.
Okay, when we come after the break, I'm going to give you a new analogy for how your mind really works, which I've just sort of came up with on a plane back from London yesterday. And we're going to try it out together, and we're going to see what that does.
Okay.
All right? Okay, so we are going to be back with more of Stephanie. We're going to be back. Connie and Nancy, you're next in the queue. If you want to get in the second half of the show, the number's to call. 866-254-1579. It's toll-free in the United States and Canada. 866-254-1579. If you want to reach the show from outside the country, dial 001-760-918-4300. If you like the kind of things we talk about on the show, visit me online at geniuscatalyst.com. And we're going to be right back with a brand new model of how your mind really works right after the break.
strategies for real change. This is Supercoach with Michael Neal.
We are back. We're talking with the Stephanie from Dallas, and we're talking about the source of all distress. Stephanie, you still with us?
Yeah, I'm still
okay.
Here.
So here, this is. I talk a lot about understanding how your mind really works, and I was in the departures lounge at Heathrow yesterday, and I got out just before they shut the airport down, which was kind of cool. I mean, not. It was kind of cool. I don't know. I think that's neat. But I started. I was on my laptop, and I was having difficulty getting online. And I suddenly just had one of those little epiphanies, and I went, "Oh my gosh, this is exactly how most of us use our minds." Imagine that your brain is like a laptop, and what it's got on it is whatever it has on it. In other words, what it has is all the experiences that you've had, all the things that you've learned, all the information that you've taken in, good, bad, or indifferent. It doesn't mean that it's necessarily accurate, but you know, they've got the computer saying garbage in, garbage out. But what you've got on your laptop is what's there. So if you try to do something, if you try to find some information out, if you try to get some insight in how to deal with the chaos in your life while you're on your laptop, all you can do is sort through the information that's already in there. Okay, but now the second your laptop goes online, then suddenly you have access to all the information in the world, practically. Now, you may still need to do some sifting, but you're now able to learn things that you didn't already know. You're able to somehow know things and get insights that weren't already in there. You're able to have literally a brand new thought. Our brains are like that. When we're just all up in our own heads and our own thinking, we're disconnected from the source of thought, from what I sometimes call energy or what I've been calling mind, from the bigger mind, the universal mind, the intelligence behind life mind. And so the second you still your mind, because that's how you get online, when your computer is too busy processing, it can't go online as easily.
Right.
But when your brain settles, when you let the thinking settle a bit, just a bit, then it reconnects to that deeper wisdom. And that's where you find your answers. That's where you find out the specifics of how to deal with what's going on the outside. So that's where the connection comes. It's not outside in. It's not, I want to stem the chaos outside my head so that I can stop experiencing chaos inside my head. It's that when I allow the chaos inside my head, which is just thought, the source of all distress, when I allow that to settle and my mind gets quieter, I automatically connect to this bigger mind, because really it's what is anyways. It's like the wave thinking it's separate from the ocean. Even if it thinks it's separate from the ocean, it isn't. It's still just a part of the ocean.
Right.
And my little personal mind is absolutely still part of the universal mind. So when I allow it to go back online, then I have access to that wisdom. And that wisdom on the inside that comes through from the inside will inform me as to how to deal with the chaos on the outside. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it makes sense.
So tell me what you heard. Tell me what that lets you do, what that suggests to you.
Well, that suggests to me that I have to be quiet. That I have to quiet the chaos in my mind, and then just listen versus trying to, I guess, like you said, work from the outside in. I mean, from the inside out. Well,
trying to go out there and fix it all.
Right, right. For me to try and handle it all at one time. But you know what I find, I guess, is that when I'm trying to quiet my mind, I can't do it like I used to be able to do it. Before I would say a lot of this stuff happened, I would find time. Or maybe I would just make more time to do it. I would make more time to kind of get out and get in nature, or, you know, sit in my backyard with a cup of coffee and just listen to the trees, the winds blow or something like that. But right now, it just seems like I don't even have time for that. I need to be thinking about, how is this bill going to get paid? Are we going to make it?
Okay, so Stephanie, let's try a little experiment, shall we?
Okay.
Okay, so I want you to just I'm going to read you something. I'm going to read you a quote from a guy named Sid Banks, who's a theosopher, philosopher, and someone whose work was very meaningful to me, and these ideas of mind and consciousness and thought really derive in many ways from his work. And what I want you to do is, you can listen to the words, but don't worry about the words. What I really want you to do as I read you this is, I want you to just do whatever you know to do to get more fully present. Okay? And then we're going to talk again when I'm done reading.
Okay.
We worry over nothing. How many times have you worried and you look back in your life and say, I don't know why I ever worried about that? Or you're in a big tantrum and you're mad at the world, or you're mad at your spouse, and 3 days later, you can't remember why you were mad, because all it was thought, and you forgot what the thought was. The past is now, it's history, it's an illusion in time, and if you're going to work from that illusion in time, you're going to keep it going. There's no end to it. To forgive is to forget, so you have to forget the past to forgive. Once you do that, you'll find your freedom. But again, I'm going to say to you, you don't just do that to other people. When you look in the mirror, you see an innocent person. And I know sometimes you might look in the mirror and say, innocent, my foot, because you don't like what you see. But why don't you like what you see? Because of your thoughts. We're back to that again. It's always thought, the missing link called divine thought. It's a gift that we were given to have the freedom to walk through life and see what we want to see. How much better than that can you get? That you have the freedom to walk through life and see as a free thinker. That's the greatest gift ever, to be a free thinker. So how are you feeling right now, Stephanie?
I don't know. That gives me a sense of calmness when you think about, really, just forget the past and to forgive.
So we just spent about a minute doing that. So when you say you don't take the time, it doesn't really take very much time. It's much more about want to than how to. And if you really can see the benefit of letting your mind quiet, you'll find a way for it to quiet. As long as you still think that it's going to work out better if I just can think more, if I can just figure this out. Well, then you're going to find it hard to find time to not do that. Does that make sense? In other words, it's...
Yeah, it does. It makes
kind
of, a lot of sense.
It's kind of common sense. It's just... So that would be what I would say to you.
Wow.
To take away. And again, you can phone back anytime and let us know how you're going. But my... God, do I want to say 100%? My knowing is that as your mind quiets, you will see what to do about the details. And you'll handle it with as much grace as is needed. And you'll find that your experience of the whole thing will be surprisingly more pleasant than you thought.
Yeah. Well, thanks.
Thank you, Stephanie.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye. Do you know, it's funny. Sometimes people say, oh, well, yeah, but my problems, I mean, it's okay for them. It's okay for Jamel. It's okay for her. But my problems, listen, I had a CEO of a biotech company in my office the other day. And we had the same conversation pretty much that I've just been having here about just allowing his mind to quiet. And because he is a successful CEO, the kind of wisdom that came through for him was the kind of wisdom he needed to make the kinds of decisions he had to make. I sometimes use the analogy of coaching Bill Gates. Okay, imagine Bill Gates comes to you for coaching and he's got amnesia. And he wants business coaching. Are you going to spend your time trying to give him business advice? Or do you want to spend the time waking him up to who he really is? So one of the reasons that I don't tend to tell people what to do, I do sometimes, I get caught up to. But one of the reasons I don't spend a lot of time on this show doing what most people think of as coaching, well, you didn't tell him what to do, is because I know that my best idea may or may not fit for you. You're the expert on you. You're the expert on your life. I can show you a pair of beautiful shoes, but I can't tell you how they fit your foot. I can tell you I think they'll fit your foot, but until you've tried them on, you won't know. And it's the same with advice. Advice is not one size fits all, but understanding is. Understanding how we create our experience of life and how we create our experience of distress, and understanding that the source of all our distress in life is thought. Well, that is one size fits all. Let's talk to Connie in Toronto. Connie, welcome to the show. What can I do for you today?
Hi, Michael. How are you doing?
I'm very well.
I just want to thank you for taking my call and for sharing the snow globe and Bill Gates analogy.
You're very welcome.
Those are pretty awesome. So my question is with regards to trying to find out what emotional patterns that block me from receiving on a monetary level.
Okay. So, well, the reason I say it like that is because if I answer the question, then I have to accept the premise that what's blocking you receiving things on a monetary level is emotional patterns.
Okay, okay.
And what my experience is, here are the things that I notice most often block people from receiving things on a monetary level, or however it is you said that.
Okay.
And one of them is thinking that money is something that we are receiving things on a money is made. Money is created. If I send out I heard this story from a guy named Rabbi Daniel Lappin. I don't remember his website, but he's got a lovely book called The Ten Commandments of Wealth. And he also does a bunch of audios on his website. And I heard this audio and I thought it was really spot on.
Mm-hmm.
And he uses the analogy of whether you think of money as cake or candle.
Oh, okay.
And if you think of money as cake, then there's a limited amount of it. And while we may all be entitled to our share, if one person takes more, there's less for everyone else. And so if we are inclined towards service, we might even scrimp on our cake to make sure there's enough cake for everybody else.
Mm-hmm.
But if we see and understand money as candle, then there are as many candles as there are people. And if I light my candle and keep my candle lit, I can, in fact, light more and more and more candles. It's an abundant universe. There is always more, and it is created by me sharing my light.
That's awesome, and I think that I feel that, and I know that.
So,
I really do know that.
So rather than, for me, rather than looking to, you know, figure out what you've got blocked on an emotional level, I would simply tune into my light. The essence of who I am, my connection to mind and my awareness of who I am, my essential self. And from that, I would just go and serve. I'd go mow lawns. I'd go and look for opportunities where I can be of service for people, where I can add value to their lives. And as I do that, as I add value to their lives, as I serve more and more, the light from my candle lights their candles. And the natural response to that, the natural result of that, is money coming back to me. Because money is the exchange that we use in our society for service. The more people I am of service to, the more deeply I serve them, the more money I will receive. And the only time that I ever see a block, that I ever believe that there's a block, is if somebody is truly serving all day, every day, and there's still no money coming in. Then I start to look for a block. But until somebody's really in that service place and really being of service, not just, you know, to a few people every now and again, but as a way of being, I don't look for a block yet, because you're not invoking the law of service.
Okay, well, to speak on that, or to share with you about that, I would say that actually I do, that I am of service. I really spend a great deal of time, you know, doing work for other people. I'm a filmmaker. I'm a documentary filmmaker.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, when I, if I can use the term, kind of access my inner light and have conversations with God about this, about, you know, what would you like me to do? What can I make that would be of service to you know, on a global level, on a regional level, on an individual level. And these are the things that I, you know, this is a path that I feel that I'm walking on. And it, you know, it definitely, I have such gratitude for being of service in all of those aspects. But I don't know if you know that when working on a film, for example, and working on a film for like 4 or 5 years, that basically I just feel like I've been of service, and then I've paid more attention to being of service, like in the cake situation, than you know, the candle situation.
Okay, so let me make a distinction and let's play with this, okay?
Sure.
Because
yeah.
I didn't mean if in any way what I said sounded like I was putting you down or saying you're not of service.
No.
That's not what I mean. Mm. So on a scale from 1 to 10, where 10 is my work touches every single person on the planet, they're aware of it and it affects their life, and 1 is my cousin Bob once saw one of my movies.
Right.
Okay, so we're going kind of extreme here.
Yeah.
You know, maybe make it 1 to 100. Whereabouts would you say you are on that scale in terms of the number of people who are actually impacted by your work?
I would say right now that I'm at about a 7.
Okay. 7 out of 10 or 7 out of 100?
7 out of 10.
7 out of 10. Okay, so most of the planet has seen your movies.
The movies that I've worked on have been, yeah. Like, I mean, they're in a variety of countries, and this next one that is going to be released soon, again, playing in festivals, distribution, television, yes.
Cool. Okay, great. I'm all curious. Okay. So then, and in terms of the depth, of the impact, you know, again, you're going to base this on feedback.
Yeah.
You know, but is your sense where 10 is completely transforms the life of someone who sees it, 1 is it mildly amused them for 6 minutes?
Well, my goal is 10. However, I feel like from feedback that I've received thus far, I would say I hold tight at about a 6 to 7.
Okay, we'll take that. And then the last part of the sort of value formula, service formula that I use, mm-hmm. is uniqueness.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm going to sense, I've got a sense of this, but so we're, here it's going to be the reverse scale. So 10
yeah.
is going to be everyone can do what I do, and 1 is
yeah.
going to be really, if you're seeing a film made by Connie, she's the only one who could make that film.
You know what? I'm going to say 1.
Yeah, no, I thought you would,
yeah.
And I get that. Okay, well, so here's the good news.
Yeah.
Maybe you do have a block. because I've got to say, I ask this question of hundreds of people each month,
mm-hmm.
and it's you know, 1 in 100
mm-hmm.
who has really already got the service part going down.
Mm-hmm.
So let's look at it another way. Where is it, if anywhere, that you are asking for money in exchange for your work, that it's not coming back to you? And let's see if we can maybe find, we can isolate what that block might be.
Like, do you mean like in a literal sense?
Yeah, I mean, in a literal sense. In other words, you know, like when I worked with people in film production, one of the
yeah.
things they always say is, you know, when I ask them where the money's coming from, the answer is always, well, wherever it is now.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, where is it that you've been looking for money that it hasn't been showing up?
Okay. So I do, first of all, want to say that there's many cases when I put out the kind of feelers for it, that it does show up.
Okay.
And that happens when, perhaps times when, like you were saying with the snow globe analogy,
mm-hmm.
where I've given a little shake to the snow globe and then I'm kind of standing back watching the snowflakes do their thing versus micromanaging where the snowflake is going and where that snowflake's going to land. So in a literal sense, it's kind of like, I would say that there was money coming in from one area, and now that due to the fact that project is done and starting another one, that in that between time, the like, say, financial support of myself is what I'm reaching out
okay.
for, and
okay.
it's not coming back.
You know what? Let's try this, because it strikes me that maybe maybe this is simpler than either of us have been making it.
Okay.
How much money would you like to have by when?
See, this question is great. I don't know, $1 million by the end of this year.
Okay, and is that, just so I've got a sense of your thermostat, is
yeah.
that within the thermostat of the kind of money that you've had before, or, you know, are you like somebody who's, sometimes somebody will be in a homeless shelter and will say that, and I know that that's just a fantasy to them. It's not real.
Well, here, you know what, that's a great question, Michael, because on one level, I feel like there's potential for that to be realistic, and on another level, I'm like the homeless shelter.
Right. So let's pick a number that is, I often like people to pick three numbers.
Okay.
Okay, the first number is this is what I need to basically get by. This will cover my bills. I won't have to make radical changes up or down in my lifestyle.
Okay.
This will cover me. That's the
okay.
first number. The second number is, this would be great. This would give me a lot of flexibility. It would give me a sense of more options. That's that kind of number. And then the third is the $1 million number. It's the,
okay,
now I can buy a yacht at long last.
Okay. So then my first number would be 65,000.
Okay.
My second number is 250,000.
Okay.
And my third number is $1 million.
Okay, perfect. Okay, so here's your homework.
Okay.
And I'll start it with you. Okay? And mm-hmm. then you get to go do it, and then you get to call back in.
Okay.
And we get to take it further, because I actually think next week's show is about money, so it'll even fit.
Okay.
Very nicely. So we're going to start with 65.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, that's the first target. So what would need to occur for you to create 65,000 in the next year? And we're just fantasizing here. We're just playing. It's like it's playing a possibility game. What would have to happen?
Well, there could be a few scenarios. One is that the film that I'm working on gets distribution.
Mm-hmm.
Another scenario is that I get a show that I'm developing gets picked up.
Okay, great.
And another scenario could be that I commence a project. That another one of my films gets funding, then I would start directing this summer.
Okay, great. So what I want you to notice is that when you start looking in a direction, you start to see more things.
Yes, thank you.
We're now looking in a more useful direction. So your homework is to keep asking that question and then take each of those things, like film mm-hmm. distribution, and go, mm-hmm. okay, well, what would need to occur for me to get film distribution? And then when you get to a point where you kind of have that, at some point you start to ask, okay, what do I need to do to make that more likely to occur?
Okay.
And then what I want you to do is I want you to phone back in next week.
Mm-hmm.
And I want you to let me know where you've got to, and we're going to carry on, okay?
Wow, thank you so much, Michael.
You're very welcome.
All right, I will take this homework. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Connie.
Thanks.
Bye. And, you know, so often it is that simple. You know, we could have gotten into a long discussion about her emotional blocks, and I'm not saying that she's necessarily doesn't have any, but they're rarely what actually stands between you and the money that you want or the wealth that you want to create in your life. It is almost always simply a case of not actually looking in the direction of what would create the money and then not taking the actions that are going to make it more likely. Now, looking in the right direction, taking the actions, it doesn't guarantee success. It just makes it 100 times more likely. And given that there's nothing we can do that will guarantee success, and that we don't need to guarantee success because the source of our distress is not getting what we want, it's our thinking, then increasing your chances by 100 times, that's about as much as we need to do to keep moving in the direction that we want to go. My thanks to Steve and Joe in the studio for keeping the show on air. My thanks to you for listening. We're going to be back with another brand new show next week. You can check me out online at www.geniuscatalyst.com. Until next time, have fun, learn heaps, and I'll talk to you soon. Bye-bye for now.